Writing this homily was like a reawakening for me. I hate to admit it, but I had forgotten a wonderful lesson that I had learned 12 years ago. And what was that lesson? Well, let me explain it this way, by taking you back to the year 2001. I was going through the formation process to see whether I wanted to become a priest or a deacon. Our formation group would meet monthly at Brown Summit. We'd arrive Friday afternoon, spend the night, and have classes all day Saturday. One of the classes certainly made a deep and abiding impression on me. One of the speakers to meet with us came into our classroom and put two big signs on the wall. One said B, B-E, and the other said Do, D-O. She asked our class to stand beneath the sign that best described who we thought we were in reference to how we lived our lives. Not a problem for me. I walked directly to the Do sign, as did many of my classmates. Yup, I was a doer, no doubt about it. Then she began to ask us more in-depth questions. She then put two more signs up between the Do and the Be. One said, Be Do, and the other said, Do Be. I began to see that perhaps I had misjudged who I was. I wasn't the pure doer that I thought I was. I had to admit I was a be doer. Yes, I like to sit quietly contemplating a beautiful sunrise or sunset, etc., but always felt guilty to be taking the time away from what I needed to do. I moved myself from the Do sign to the Be Doer sign, quite happy with my choice. Yup, I was a Be Doer, albeit a closet one, but no question about it. So let's now jump to present day. People often tell me, I know how busy you are, as if they need to apologize for interrupting me. And that embarrasses me because I don't want people to feel apologetic about calling me. I don't want to be one of those self-important people with that can't you see I'm busy aura and irritability with interruptions. But I know sometimes I get that way. Do you? Call me Martha. Evidently in those 12 years since my epiphany that I was really a bee doer, I had forgotten who I really was. I had ignored my Mary side completely. Sometimes I feel overwhelmed by all I need to do, the pressure I feel to do it, and all I'm not getting done, people I don't get to visit, calls I don't get to make, books I don't get to read, etc. Sometimes I feel as if I'm drowning in a sea of need-to-dos. And how about all that bad news in the world? The number of people caught in poverty and war and epidemics, the distance between the wealthy few and the suffering poor. So much to process, it's overwhelming. I feel as angry as Martha in our passage today, frustrated and exasperated. I just can't keep up with everything on my plate. Now, I'm not whining this morning, and I'm not asking anyone to ever hesitate to call me. The truth is, I love what I do. I love being a deacon and a hospital chaplain. What I'm saying, you see, is that sometimes I am Martha, and maybe so are you. So many people I talk to these days feel too busy, bordering on burnout, worried and distracted by many things. Our lives are too complicated for our own good. We get too busy for each other. We get so focused on our self-importance. We get too busy to take time with God. And then we start getting angry with other people. We get angry with God. And that's a problem. It isn't that we have too much to do. There are only 24 hours in a day, and we can only do so much. It's the weight of the psychic burden we carry, the anxiety and anger, and the damage it does to our souls and our relationships. That's what we see happening in the story of Martha and Mary. Martha and Mary live with their brother Lazarus in Bethany, a suburb of Jerusalem. In Luke's story, Lazarus isn't even mentioned. Most likely, he is sitting with the men listening to the teacher, while the women are supposed to be providing all essential services of hospitality. So Martha, being Martha, first century Palestine's own Martha Stewart, begins to do the things that Martha does best. She begins to prepare a meal. What interests Luke, however, is that Mary isn't helping. She isn't doing her customary duty. Instead of helping with all the intricate tasks of cooking in that day, she's sitting with Jesus too, which leaves double duty for her hard-working sister, Martha. Martha notices this, and she notices that Jesus doesn't seem to notice either. So have you ever done this? She rattles the pans in the kitchen a little louder than she needs to. She probably clears her throat a few times and coughs as she sets the table. But Mary is oblivious, as are all the disciples. Jesus is right in the middle of making his most profound point when Martha finally blows. She storms in from the kitchen and accosts not her sister or her brother, but her honored guest, Jesus. "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do all the work myself? Tell her to help me." Poor Martha. But can we blame Martha for blowing up over Mary's irresponsibility? Who hasn't felt that way before? Call me Martha, but I see your point. It isn't fair. I want Jesus to say, "Lazarus, get off your duff and help your sister." I want him to say, "Martha, I'm sorry. We've all been insensitive to you. We'll all pitch in, and then you can join us too." But no, Jesus doesn't say any of this. He says, "Martha, Martha." She thinks he'll rebuke Mary. Instead, he calls Martha by name with compassion and concern and love. Jesus understands what's going on with Martha. And he honors her needs when he calls her by her name. "Martha, Martha, you are worried and distracted by many things. Only one thing is needed. Mary has chosen the better part, which will not be taken away from her." But wait, instead of correcting the injustice, Jesus tells Martha to chill out. Instead of taking Martha's side, Jesus affirms Mary. So now let's take a closer look at Mary. She refuses to play the role, submit to the men, to miss this rare opportunity to sit with Jesus. Much has been preached about the value of Mary as a model of reflection, a model of contemplation. Martha labors on and on, but it is the contemplative one, Mary, whom Jesus honors. The big difficulty with this interpretation is that Luke places the story right after the parable of the Good Samaritan, which was our gospel reading last Sunday. And precisely, what does that story encourage us to do? It tells us to be active helpers, to go out of our way to serve our neighbors in need, and teaches us who our neighbors are by virtue of the fact that they are in need. So there's got to be more here than just extolling the contemplative life. We could also lift up that Mary shows herself to be a rebel of her day. After all, in first century Palestine, women did not sit in the same room with men talking about God as we're doing today. Women were at home where they could learn from their mothers. It was unheard of for a woman like Mary to learn with the men. So there is more to this story. Mary of Bethany is an early feminist, stepping into a man's world so that she and her daughters might have the same access to a theological education as the men in her community. I'd like to suggest another reading of this text. Jesus has come to the house with something entirely different in mind. Oh, of course, he has arrived hungry, but he hungers not just for the excellent food that Martha will serve. Knowing the gifts of each of the householders, Jesus is using Martha's busyness and Mary's contemplation to make a good point about the balance that is essential in communities of faith. Jesus is making a point that we need both the contemplation of Mary and the hospitality and service of Martha. We need both, most especially in our church. Jesus was not saying we should let the needs of the world go and only turn our attention to heaven while other people take care of us. He isn't saying always be Mary here. He's saying don't always be Martha. He's saying don't get so busy working for me that you forget me. So call me Martha, but sometimes call me Mary too. Just when you and I are feeling overwhelmed, that's when we need to stop and sit at Jesus' feet for a while. Let him put his arms around us and comfort us. Let him guide us into what needs to be done. Let him remind us that while the world needs fixing, it isn't hopeless. And it's not up to you and me to fix it. Do what you can. Trust God to finish it. Amen.